Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
The 2014 Sundance Film Festival will be taking place from January 16th through January 26th in Park City, Salt Lake City, Ogden, and at the Sundance Resort. Individual tickets are now available to Utah locals. Visit sundance.org/festival/locals.
Isha B, filling in for Dan Nalen, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this episode, we talk about Sketch Sundays, we talk to Jeffrey Stedman from Yelp about local delis, and we find out more about Adopt a Native Elder. Sketch Sundays is a nonprofit monthly art event held in Salt Lake City. On the final Sunday of each month, the group gather artists from around the city to sketch works using simple materials like stencils or charcoal. The event draws in hundreds of spectators and fans to watch the artists work, and the pieces are later sold to the public for around $10 to $50. Slug writer Rihanna Sonicson sat down with the co-founders, Janelle James and Tim Lawler, about the event.
So what inspired you to bring Sketch Sunday to fruition, and can you tell me what Sketch Sunday is?
About a year ago, I went to an event like this in San Francisco, and what it is a time where patrons and artists can get together in a social setting, you know, have some beers, the artists sketch, and patrons can walk around and watch this, which is a rare opportunity that most people don't get to see, to watch a painting come to life or see artwork come to life. Met Janelle. She said that she could provide artists if I could provide a space. And so we both went out and hunted for a space. Janelle pulled together 12 artists for our first one, which happened in 3 months. That was kind of the start of Sketch Sundays.
How long did it take you to approach her about it, and like, what was the initial conversation?
Tim wanted to jump on this because, you know, he was so enthusiastic about it. And I know that these events take place in New York too, and it just sounded like a great idea. Tim really wanted to get going with it. I mean, we turned it around in about a month.
How does it work for the artists involved?
Yeah, well, for the artists involved, they can choose any medium that they work with. You know, one gentleman, Paul Bernard, works with printing plates, and he uses
a Dremel.
Yeah, thanks. He uses a Dremel to carve into the plate, and then he puts oil over that. They work from imagination, they work from a photo, they work from inspiration around the room. We have one gal who just this past Sketch Sunday painted the band and sold two pieces to the band.
Nice.
We have photographers, and you know, we are now starting to introduce musicians because we want it to be open to all kinds of artists.
How did these professional artists get invited to participate? And can you elaborate on that a little bit? I mean, can anybody just show up to this, or is it strictly like invited artists and people that are working professionally as artists?
It's both. We do invite our artists because we want to make sure to provide them with a proper marketing on Facebook and on our website. But we also allow walk-in artists. So every month we invite 12 artists, and they're professional or emerging artists. Typically they have a website and they've done art in the past, and their art is marketable. But walk-in artists are also very talented. Some are just maybe a little more shy, maybe they just don't want the exposure, they don't want that kind of pressure, which is totally understandable,
right.
And they would just prefer to sit around the outside of the room. So our 12 invited artists sit at a center table, kind of for all the patrons to walk around and be able to see, and invited artists just sit along the perimeter of the room and do what they do. But everybody is welcome to sell their work directly to the public for $10 to $50, depending on, you know, whatever it is they feel they need to get for their work.
With selling it, where does the money go to? Does it go directly to the artist? Does it go to...
Yeah, that's a great thing about this, is there's no middleman. It's directly the artist and the patron work out a price, or are able to just work together. So we make absolutely no money. In fact, you know, we spend money to put on the event for like marketing and stuff. But yeah, we don't make any money off this. Squatters only makes the money off of their food and drink. You know, the artists get to keep 100% of what they sell. They're also giving their, or selling their art at an incredible rate too. You know, between $10 and $50 for an original piece of art is a great deal.
Yeah, and they get to see it, like, the whole piece come to, like, finalization, which is like pretty amazing. Some people, yeah, like you were saying, don't get to see that. Right. So I think that's a pretty interesting.
Yeah, and it's pretty fun too to see patrons walk around the artists, and you'll see like four or five people standing around one artist that don't know each other.
Right.
And then they start talking about that piece of art together as a group, kind of over the artist's shoulder, which can maybe be a little distracting or intimidating to the artist, but it's a great social icebreaker, mm-hmm. and people get to create conversation on a different platform than they might otherwise.
Is there a theme to any of the Sunday sketch sessions? I know we touched on this briefly, but I mean, is that something that you are going to kind of implement at times? We have the holidays coming up, etc. I mean, or is it just completely left up to the artist, like artistic choice?
Yeah, we're at our third, we did our third Sketch Sunday, but we're keeping this very organic, and we're open to any ideas, and that has been brought up, like, you know, maybe we, you know, we do have a theme one month, maybe we do a fundraiser or something, or maybe we, you know, have the artist, one painting that gets passed around the whole table or something like that, or everyone focuses on some sort of theme. We haven't implemented any of that yet, but you know, all those ideas have kind of come to the table and throwing them around.
What are your future plans for the Sketch Sundays? I know we just touched on this a little bit, but I mean, do you see it in a like a grander, like growing out of Squatters? I mean, what is your ultimate plan? I know right now it seems like it's fun and it's like anything else, so it can get like monotonous. It can, you know, turn into something either good or something very like laborious.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what is your, I mean, you're really enthusiastic about it. So what are your plans now for it?
Well, we want to keep growing it, you know, get more people out there and get more people aware, but, and then let it just grow organically, you know, have fun with it. We don't want it to get stale. Keep changing it up, you know. If it does start to seem like the same old, throw in themes or, you know, mix it up. And we're constantly asking patrons and artists, you know, what did you like, what didn't you like? And from that feedback, we've been, you know, trying to make changes to, most of the stuff's been technical right now, but
right.
People are throwing out ideas and we want to implement it, you know, and keep it fresh and new as possible.
It has been suggested to us, people need to be better educated. It's educating people about the arts is a really important thing, and this is a great avenue for that. In a way, it's kind of like buying a starter home, your first piece of art. It gets you sucked in and hooked on buying art, and we see the process, it becomes an educational process. So we're hoping maybe to have gallery owners, museum curators, professors, professional artists, maybe do 15-minute talks at each Sketch Sundays down the road to add a little educational twist to it. So that's one way we could grow it. Another idea that was brought to mind, this would be a perfect like corporate event. And in fact, we are looking for anybody who might want to attach their name to Sketch Sundays, because we could definitely use some marketing. And it is that the end of the year is approaching, and so if you have any money left over and you don't know what to do with that $1,000, like Sketch Sundays could really put that to good use if you believe in the arts. And so we're really looking to grow it, but we also need some help to grow it, and there are a lot of ways to do that. So I just wanted to add that quickly.
So along with that, are you, when you were speaking about like you have Facebook, what are the social media sites or things that you're doing to kind of branch out and make people aware of what is happening and what your intentions are?
Yeah, so Facebook's been our main driver right now. We've also tapped into, it's called meetup.com, mm-hmm. and the meetup groups, and you know, they're always looking for something going on, and we've had a bunch of those groups come down and experience it. We have our website, right now as well.
As far as for the artist, what is the workspace like? I know you touched on a little bit, like, are they able to have something that they can rely on for a visual reference? Are people observing them?
The artist comes in about 15 minutes before 5 and sets up at the center table, starts to pull out all their materials and get set up and create. Mm-hmm. And they, depending on the artist, they can create 3 to 5 pieces in a night. And they just go start to finish, and they're quick sketches, so they take the artist about 30 minutes. And the artists are pretty involved, they're pretty focused and consumed and into what they're doing, but they're also available and free and happy to talk to any patron that has a question.
Yeah, from the patron side, you know, that's more where I'm coming from. It's great, you know, to see a canvas come to life. You know, this last one, there's this completely black canvas, and all of a sudden, paint's going to the canvas, and this face just starts slowly appearing, and you have no idea what the face is going to look like. And as it's developing, you're just like, you know, there's like this anticipation and stuff, and it's great. And all of a sudden, this artist had this crowd around him, you know, watching this painting come to life and this face emerge out of that. And that's an experience that you would never get, because most artists work in their studios.
Right.
You don't have that ability to sit over their shoulders. And the nice thing, too, is you're able to tap them on the shoulder and ask them about how they're doing it. And they love to talk about what they're doing. And they'll tell you about their technique, and they'll tell you about, you know, what inspires them, stuff like that. And it's inspiring being on that side of the canvas to...
So you have a story to connect with the piece of art that you actually purchased and have got to know the person that actually did it. That's awesome.
And that's the great thing, too, is when you hang that up in your house.
You remember.
You know, someone's like, oh, what's that? And you can tell them the whole story, because there's, you know, a whole story behind it.
So are there any artists that have participated in Sketch Sundays that you are particularly big fans of? I know as it grows and people become involved, I know I've done art events, and you tend to get starstruck with some of the people that do attend because you admire them, obviously. Is there a few that you want to invite? Is there a few that are currently attending that you're really impressed with and, like, really excited about?
Yeah, you know, we'd love to go over all the ones that are coming up for November. But myself, personally, I started to become a mini collector. Christy Lauren, I now have two of her pieces. Jeffrey Hale, I have three of his pieces. Sue Martin, I have one of hers.
Sue Martin's a watercolorist. Yeah. Sandy Olson does horses and cats. Paul Bernard does those etchings on plates, those abstracts. Those are pretty impressive. Yeah, tell her who our lineup is. One in particular, I think I am so impressed with, and I can hardly stand it. Trevor Southey is coming, and he's actually from South Africa, and he's been an artist since the 60s, and he's had a show at the Utah Museum of Fine Art, and he's big time. Winter Jones is also an amazing abstract artist. She's been on tour at a lot of festivals, just got back from Beverly Hills. Queen Latifah loves her work. Go Winter! And she's actually represented by A Gallery. Tony Polson is kind of, he's more of a cartoon artist.
His stuff's great, though.
Yeah,
so much fun.
It's amazing. And then Christy Lauren is coming. Jen Melkomian is a photographer. Brandon Cook is an awesome tonalist. His work, he does tonal landscapes, and they're beautiful. I'm looking to buy one of his this coming month. Kat Martin, Malia Denali, Michelle Condrat, another landscape artist, Sandy Olson, John Johnson, and Paul Bernard again. So we have a really good lineup of artists for next month.
Are you looking for local artists here?
Yeah, we're mostly trying to support the local Utah artist crowd. If somebody big from LA came to Utah and wanted to be a part of it, we wouldn't say no.
Right. As far as local artists here, what do they have to do in order to participate? They can just show up and then show their work to you and see if they can become an invited artist?
Yeah, they can do that, or they can just reach out to me at JanelleJamesStudios.com, and if they have a website, that's all the better, and then we'll find a spot for them. We really just want to be accessible to all artists, reasonably so. So, you know, they can get exposure and start getting recognition for their work and their creative ability.
The next Sketch Sunday will take place on November 24th and will be held at Squatters at 147 West Broadway in downtown Salt Lake City. For more info on the event and to learn how to participate, visit them online at facebook.com/SketchSundaysSLC or SketchSundays.com. Laverkin is a three-piece rock band based out of Salt Lake City. The band formed in late 2012 and is comprised of former members of Form of Rocket, Accidente, and Cop and a Criminal. The band released their debut EP, Judge the Judger, in early September on Exigent Records. We're going to listen to Locomotive off their 2013 EP, Judge the Judger.
What trains are coming? more trains are coming!
To download the album, check them out at laverkinmusic.bandcamp.com. For more info on the band, visit them online at facebook.com/laverkin.
Hey guys, it's the producer for this show, Gavin Sheehan, and I'm here today with Jeffrey Stedman from Yelp at yelp.com, at Yelp Utah, at Twitter. What else have you got out there on
Facebook? Find me on Facebook, facebook.com/YelpSLC, or on Instagram at YelpSLC. I don't know, we're out there. You can find us.
Yes, and Jeffrey does this every month. We're so appreciative of him coming in here, doing these little reviews that we have of places around the valley. And this month we're going to be talking about delis.
It's deli time, and it's interesting when we talk about delis. We're going to get into a bunch of different kinds of delis, but like deli, when you think about it, is such a loose term. Like I always think of like some swarthy dude with really large forearms slicing meats.
Yeah, the old school, what you used to see in the cartoons.
Yeah.
In every television show where there's just a rack of meat behind people. But that's really not the case these days.
It's... No, I mean, there's a lot of frou-frou kind of deli. There's like basic like sandwich shop. Like what really is the difference between a sandwich shop and a deli? I don't know. They slice their meat on site? I don't really know. So we're going to talk about some delis here in town. The first couple I'm not really going to get into. to, because I just think they're well enough known that we don't really need to talk about them. So Caputo's, I think, is the natural one to think about. That's 4 out of 5 stars, 138 reviews, right across from Pioneer Park, 314 West Broadway.
Just right over here. We could throw a rock at them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So most people know about that. Granado's, also kind of along the same vein, 1391 South, 300 West, 4 out of 5 after 21 reviews. And then there's like a bunch of deli slash sandwich shops that I'm just going to list off here. Well, Siegfried's is not. Siegfried's is different. It's German delicatessen. But then you have like Ledger's, Caruso's, Toaster's, Robin's Nest, Town and Country, which is like a market, but then a giant sandwich shop in the back. Grove Market, same kind of deal.
It's places that offer the deli experience, but primarily it could be just a sandwich shop.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what I did want to talk about is some places who were maybe some like more unique kind of deli stuff going on. So the first thing we're going to talk about is really get into is like Jewish delis. I say Jewish deli and everybody, like the hair on the back of their neck stands up, especially if they've been like to New York, because they're like, oh yeah, I'm gonna give me some Jewish deli. Now, to be honest and fair, we don't really have like a true Jewish deli here in Salt Lake, but we got a couple of things that sort of orbit in that universe. First off, 9th South Delicatessen, 931 East, 900 South, 4 out of 5 stars after 40 reviews. Monica T says, this is not your grandma in Boca's deli. So if it isn't my grandma's deli, what kind of place is this, she asks. Something that takes a lot of the great stuff from the old school places and freshens it up into something really awesome. Again, don't go thinking it's a Jewish deli, but they do have the matzo ball soup, and they do have the sandwiches, like the Reuben and that kind of stuff.
We've talked about them before on the show, too.
We have.
It's more of has the classic flavor, but it also has something for everybody.
And I don't think they keep kosher, so obviously that's maybe not a real Jewish deli. There's one that maybe orbits that planet a little bit closer called Feldman's Deli, which I don't know if we've talked about on here. We talked about Jewish foods a while ago, but this is a pretty new business. 2005 East, 2700 South, 4 out of 5 stars after 45 reviews. Listen to what Deb D says. Here's what you need to know. Go to Feldman's with a group of friends, have everyone order something different, and make it a taste fest. Don't forget to ask for an extra napkin or two, because you'll most certainly get schmutz on your face while trying the Sloppy Joe. I've had the Sloppy Joe. It's not like a loose meat Sloppy Joe. It's
not kind of falling out as you eat it.
Yeah, it's more like a pastrami sandwich, but it's got all kinds of stuff on top of it. They do make a really great Reuben. They do have the, what's it called, gefilte fish. They have, you know, some of those breakfasty items that you look for. So
nice.
It orbits a little bit closer, and it's kind of a neat little like deli kind of a feel to it. Moving on, another kind of deli, Cucina Deli. 1026 2nd Avenue, 4 out of 5 after 33 reviews. Kyle K. clues us in on some of his favorites. I've particularly enjoyed the smoked meatballs, which have a delicious, deep, smoky flavor swimming in a tangy homemade marinara.
That sounds really good right there.
Smoked meatballs, come on.
Yes.
And then he goes on, they have an interesting addition to the menu, the beet salad, which is certainly non-traditional. The beets are and jicama are sliced large and thin and are on the outside of a mountain of greens, tasty and refreshing, if a bit unexpected. So again, not a traditional deli, but something kind of interesting. So I did kind of also want to talk about some stuff on the west side that maybe some folks haven't heard of. These are some kind of unique and interesting places. First of all, there's a place on Redwood Road, 2850 South, called European Pizza Deli.
I know that area.
So they do have pizza. 4 out of 5 after 14 reviews. Spencer S. Went at first for just the pizza, but then he did update his review and said, I have now tried the sandwiches and they are fantastic. They maintain the proper ratio of innards to bread, and the bread is a wonderful chewy type, which I have never had anywhere else. I've also tried a regional Eastern European, I believe, dish they offer, which was meat and potatoes inside a flaky dough. It was delicious and extremely cheap. So, yeah, it is kind of this European-influenced pizza slash sandwich deli kind of a thing. Really unique, again, out on Redwood Road. And then something kind of the same flavor, Patron's Pazzo Vita Deli, which is 4 out of 5 after 22 reviews. Lexi says, I had the prosciutto sandwich on ciabatta, which was lovely. I mean, you can't go wrong with prosciutto. My friend loved the egg salad and returned 2 days in a row after our visit. If you live or work in the area, you definitely need to make this part of your rotation. Huge menu so your palate won't get bored. And that's, again, Patron's Pazzo Vita Deli. And then a couple of, like, unheralded workhorse delis around town. You know what I mean? Like, these are like, jump in, get a sandwich, nothing fancy. First of all, Joni's Deli, which probably a lot of the listeners are familiar with, 52 yes. East, 1700 South. 3.5 out of 5 after 20. Angie H. always gets the Philly cheesesteak meal. She says it's a big sandwich stuffed with meat, cheese, mushrooms, onions, and served with pepperoncinis on the side. Hand-cut fries, served with fry sauce, and fries are always greasy, delicious, and hot.
Yeah, and I've had those sandwiches. It's those type of sandwiches where everything is just packed to the point of, like, you're constantly reaching for napkins. It's a sandwich that they do right the first time, and you're not thinking of, oh, I just loaded up on a ton of bread and, like, this much meat.
Yeah, Joni's, again, like, it's not gonna win any dining awards. It's not fancy fare, but they just, that's maybe more of my vision of, like, a swarthy dude stuffing bread full of, like, meats and sauces and things, you know, as a classic, like, kind of, I guess, divey deli. And then finally, Bell's Deli, which is one, I have to be honest, I have not visited this, but it has 4.5 out of 5 after 8 reviews. It's located 1207 West, 4800 South, out on the west side. Tony A. says, it's the unchained lunch stop that is a must for any American with taste, and he actually says American, with taste buds. This is the cheeseburger Jimmy Buffett dreamed about in his song Cheeseburger in Paradise. Super friendly, extremely simple and low-key. The sitting area is a place to spend lunchtime, not just gobbling your food, but visiting. After your meal, be sure to take along one of her signature chocolate chip cookies for dessert, or the secret snack you hide in your folio case or desk drawer.
That sounds so nice right now.
Yeah, so that's what I love is, actually when I got on and was really trying to figure out what delis we would be talking about today, that's one thing I noticed is, like, everybody apostrophe S has a deli. And they're just like neighborhood pockets, just somebody throwing sandwiches together.
And it's nice to see more in the valley, because I can't speak for all of our listeners, but for myself, I lived in West Valley and the Taylorsville area, not to get down on the area, but it's all strip malls. It's all the same national chains or regional chains that you've already run into a dozen times over, and you're going to find every 3 major intersections over. So it's kind of cool to see the rise of delis on the west side, if you will.
Like, yeah.
And not just Salt Lake west side, but hitting in that south central area of the valley.
Yeah, and delis are one of those things where, I mean, I've had some bad sandwiches before. There was a deli who will not be named that just did not do it for me. But by and large, like, it's a sandwich, usually, right? Sliced meats, maybe like some salads they do, or something in the case that you can pick up. And it's kind of hard to, like, really screw it up. So it's worth going into experiment at some of these, like, hole-in-the-wall little sandwich delis that are all around west side, south side. I've been to some even like 132nd South, 138th South. There's one clear out there. You know, and it's worth just jumping in and grabbing a sandwich.
It's one of the most basic things. You can't really screw up a sandwich that badly.
Yeah, the one that was bad was just the meat. Was not. I mean, it's a deli. Like, you've got to get the meat right, and it was, like, yeah, really gristly and.
You got the end of
cheap,
whatever.
The cheap cut of meat. Other than that, though, man, that's exactly it. So, yeah, if you want to search, you know, there's a ton of delis out there with just a couple of reviews, just because they're not well known. A lot of real gems that are just waiting to be found. So, get on Yelp, search for deli, and there's, like, you know, page after page after page of results and stuff you can find in your own neighborhood.
And inform the public as to what they can really find out there.
Yeah, get out, write a review. I mean, that's how we know about some of these, like Bell's. I've never been there, but yeah, I read Tony's review and I gotta go try it now.
Nice. Well, thank you, Jeffrey, for coming in yet again, doing this, putting up with me filling in for Dan for 1 week.
Oh, please. He has no job security anymore. That's it. He's out.
Oh, come on. This is the reason why I'm behind the computer.
No. Gavin, you're the new Dan.
Oh, great. The new Dan. Tell everybody where they can find you again.
Yeah, come find me at Yelp.com. You can download the app for Android, iPhone, BlackBerry, Windows Phone. It's free. Find me at Yelp Utah on Twitter, or facebook.com/YelpSLC, or YelpSLC on Instagram. We're all over the place. Always involved, always looking for, you know, great stuff around town, and happy to come in and talk to you guys about it.
Do you got any events coming up over the next month from when this episode airs?
So so this is just a little preview for everyone listening. We're starting up something right now called Yelp Shops Local, which we do every year, and we try to highlight great local businesses and support really cool stuff going on, as well as organize our own events in the community to encourage people to go out and shop local. I mean, Thanksgiving is super late this year, and so December is really packed full of shopping, and we just hope that we can be a way to shine a light on great local businesses and divert some of that money back into Salt Lake City. So we're pumped about that.
And when does that start off?
Well, I mean, I'm doing stuff now, just getting plans together and partners together, pretty much like, you know, Black Friday, Small Business Saturday is when people really start thinking about shopping. So that's when we really start hitting it hard.
Very cool. Thank you as always, Jeffrey. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Plan B Theater Company presents the world premiere of Eric Samuelson's Radio Hour Episode 8, Fariana, on December 3rd in the Gene Wagner Theater at the Rose, a holiday show about a holiday show performed as a radio show about the writers of a children's television show possessed by their own characters. Attendees to this performance become the live studio audience. Tickets and info at planbtheater.org.
The weekly events for the daily calendar for November 19th through November 25th. On Tuesday, November 19th, we've got Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band at Urban Lounge. Wednesday, November 20th, Alejandro Escovedo and Amy Cook at Park City Live. We've got Monster Magnet at Urban Lounge, Portland Cello Project at the Stateroom. On Friday, November 22nd, John Legend is at Kingsbury Hall. Someone Still Loves You, Boris Yeltsin, is at Kilby Court for all those underagers. Saturday, November 23rd, Bill Callahan of Smog is at the Stateroom. Lupe Fiasco is at the Depot. Morbid Angel is at Murray Theater. On Sunday, November 24th, Less Than Jake and Anti-Flag are at the Complex. And on Monday, November 25th, Salt Lake Poetry Slam is at Weller Bookworks. For more from the Daily Calendar, go to slugmag.com. Joshua James is an Americana folk musician based out of American Fork. He debuted in 2006 with his album B-Sides, It's Dark Outside, and quickly followed it up with his sophomore album, Fields and Floods, in 2007. James gained national exposure when songs from his third album, The Sun Is Always Brighter, received airplay on NPR, followed by being voted Best 2007 Folk Album on iTunes. His fourth album, 2009's Build Me This, received more exposure on the FX show Sons of Anarchy, followed by appearances at South by Southwest, Exponential, Forkfest, and Bonnaroo, along with tours with John Mayer, Annie DeFranco, and Brent Denon. Last November, James released his fifth full-length album, From the Top of Willamette Mountain, and this year he's released a follow-up EP called Well, Then I'll Go to Hell. We're going to listen to Sleepwalker off his 2013 EP.
For a week, so we raided their liquor stash and walked. down to the riverside.
Download the new EP, check out northplatte.bandcamp.com, and for more information on James and his music, visit him online at joshuajames.tv. The Adopt a Native Elder Program is a nonprofit based out of Park City. The organization works to help Native Americans through charity work, contributions, donations, and other resources to help mend the rift between cultures. To date, the program provides food, clothing, medicine, fabrics, and other materials to help them in their daily lives. Slug writer Amanda Rock sat down with Assistant Director Wendy Sanborn to talk about the program.
Adopt a Native Elder, what is it?
Adopt a Native Elder is a group that's been in existence for 27 years, and we work with elderly people who live on the Navajo Reservation. And our goal is to help them live out the rest of their lives in their traditional way. And so we try to support them by providing food, medicine. This time of year, we're providing warm blankets, loads of firewood, so people can stay warm during the cold winter months.
How did Adopt a Native Elder begin?
It originally started because of the Hopi Navajo land dispute.
Mm-hmm.
And there were Navajo elders living on that disputed borderland. And the Linda Myers, who founded the program, wanted to support them. She didn't necessarily want to support them in an overtly political way, but she wanted to make sure that they had food and other supplies that they might need. But what we really evolved away from that period was very influential in that region, but now we've expanded over a large portion of the Navajo Nation, so we've really shifted our focus to providing these supports for traditional elders across the Navajo Nation. And so we've moved really into an entirely humanitarian.
That's cool. I didn't know that. So when you say traditional, what do you mean?
Well,
a lot of us don't know.
That's an excellent question. So for different tribal groups, obviously, they have different types of traditional lives. And for the Navajo people, they have lived in the Four Corners region of southern Utah, northern Arizona for many, many centuries. And the elders they're on their homelands. That's very important to their sense of self and who they are. And the elders we work with are people who traditionally lived a subsistence lifestyle. So they farmed crops, they raised sheep. The women often turned sheep wool into yarn and then wove rugs. And those rugs, which I think many of us are familiar with, all the beautiful patterns, they would sell them at trading posts to help them buy supplies. So, and the men might be sheep herders or farmers, and they might live in a hogan, which is their traditional home, the eight-sided log structure. It's a single room that a family of 10, 12 people might live
in.
And they worked really, really hard. As they've gotten older, they can't work that hard anymore. But because they lived a subsistence lifestyle, obviously they don't have savings or retirement to fall back on. And that's why we're trying to help them with some of the basics that they might need. But they also lived in their spiritual traditions and their cultural traditions. So one of the things that might seem kind of like a surface, but is really important, is people might have seen Navajo ladies before, and they're wearing their velvet tops and all kinds of turquoise jewelry and then calico skirts. And we even want to make sure they can still wear their traditional clothes, so we provide them with fabric so they can make
those
clothes.
Great. It's so hard to think of, but they don't have running water. They don't have things like that. They're living...
Some of the elders have running water and electricity. Mm-hmm. Many do not. Mm-hmm. They live in extremely remote areas. So if we can picture southern Utah.
Okay.
So that kind of a landscape, yeah, that desert landscape that's so beautiful but is also very rugged, very mm-hmm. cold in the winter, very hot in the summer. And many of the people live an hour or two on dirt roads from any main road or any store, and also from infrastructure. So many of them have never had running water and have never had electricity. So on one hand, they're accustomed to it, but on the other hand, especially as you get older, not having access to water, not yeah. having access to electricity makes life obviously much harder.
Absolutely. So talk a little bit about the food runs that you guys do.
So our food runs, we go to 11 different communities on the Navajo Nation, and mostly a few in southern Utah, mostly northern Arizona. And we meet with large groups of volunteers. If someone were to volunteer, they would join.
Like me.
Yes. You would join us for about a 4-day journey. Wow. The first day we come together mm-hmm. As a group of volunteers, because we want to kind of change the way we're looking at the world. We want to slow down a little bit. And for most of us, we are rushing right before we leave for the land. But the elder's lifestyle is much more, it's slower. And we want to kind of get into the space of what their life is like. And we want to slow down enough so that we appreciate the experience and the opportunity that we have
oh,
to be with
neat.
Them.
I didn't know that was part of it.
Yeah, it's definitely meant to help us come into, we call it like the heart space, mm-hmm. but we also want to be in that space where we're really seeing the culture and we're seeing the elders for who they are. So the first day we come together as a group, then the next 3 days we would go out, went to a different community every day, mm-hmm. and we're doing our food and supply deliveries. But what I love about the program is that when we go to someone's homeland or a senior center or a shade house, we set up a beautiful table full of giveaways that our volunteers have spent days making pretty. But they're very simple things like dish soap, laundry soap, things people need. Mm-hmm. We set up all of their boxes outside in a rainbow. We call it the rainbow of giving. And
that's so nice.
Everything is for an individual elder, because we don't want it to just seem like a supply drop.
Yeah.
We are there to be in community with each other. And so then we end up spending several hours. We kind of have a meeting and do some activities that tend to make people laugh and bond with each other, even if you don't mm-hmm. speak the same language. And then we share a meal. And my feeling is that you work hard, but you feel moved by the experience of being with the elders. And I went on my first food run 9 years ago. After I did it, I thought, that was kind of hard, you know?
Yeah, it definitely sounds like hard work.
And then you feel gratified, because mm-hmm. when you're volunteering, you want to accomplish something. And what I noticed is the more I sat with it, the more impactful and profound it became to me, because I thought, we got to be on one of these elders' homeland. We were in community with these elders, and we came with the intention of helping provide things they need, but also doing it in a very honoring and loving way. And to me, that's a very moving.
That is. It's not like charity. It's more of an experience, I guess.
Yeah, and it kind of feels complete. Mm-hmm. It's hard to explain, but we're premised on the giveaway circle, and that's a Native tradition across many Native cultures, which is you give of your very best without any expectation of receiving anything in return. And if you really try to live that, you feel very connected to the people that you're with, yeah. and you also see profound generosity from the elders back to us, which is, needless to say, deeply moving when you're bringing food.
Yeah, I'm sure
something
they're
that so, basic.
So grateful.
And can I say one other thing really
quickly? Yeah, of course.
So we really de-emphasize our political underpinnings, because mm-hmm. we've just evolved away from it, but we're not trying to avoid it. It's just that's not our organization anymore.
Yeah.
It was the foundation, but we've moved. And for me, by the time I came into the organization 9 years ago, we were really focused on bringing healing between our cultures. That's why I wanted to be part of the program. And to me, that is what's so moving about it. Just being mm-hmm. with each other brings the sense of oneness and connection, and seeing the elders, some of the elders, being really welcoming us with open arms is also a profound example of forgiveness. Because many of them experienced many injustices during their own life. It's not historical, it's mm-hmm. personal.
Like, yeah.
And to have them, through the years, have developed trust, it's amazing to see that example of forgiveness and openness. And I think something
really,
we could learn from.
Absolutely. How else can people help adopt a native elder do this kind of work?
So the rug show is critical for us. So are people coming and participating on food runs. And we always have the dates listed on our website if anybody's interested. We do them in the spring and the fall. You can also adopt an elder, which in this case, really, it's not really adoption. What it is you're saying you're committing to providing food for them in the spring and the fall. And so it's $100 worth of food. And many people, if they're able to, will also provide other items, like that fabric we talked about, a box of medical supplies, a load of firewood. But all we ask is that you just make sure that they get their food in the spring and the fall. And there are also other ways, you can also donate, obviously, in a variety of ways to support the program. We also have a warehouse here in Salt Lake.
And right here in Salt Lake.
And people can volunteer on Tuesday and Friday mornings. And that's usually 9:30 to about noon. And what we're doing is with all the donations we get, we're buying all the food and the other supplies. We box them up and we make sure that they're directed to each individual elder. And our warehouse community is just filled with the most amazing people. So it's a joy to be there with them. We have really amazing volunteers. To me, I think many of us are motivated by the opportunity to be with the elders, but most of the year we're with each other.
Yeah, you're
prepping,
really,
you know, doing
dedicated,
the work.
Yeah.
And we just love being with each other. So you also just have this amazing core of volunteers who are just really dedicated, hardworking, compassionate people who are really nice.
Yeah, who are nice to hang out with. Oh, that's so great. So besides elders, I know that you guys help out the kids on the reservation. Talk about Walk in Beauty, because it's such a moving thing.
The Walk in Beauty program is very dear to me. Several years ago, we started the program. And Walk in Beauty is a program to provide brand new shoes for elementary age kids on the reservation. And to me, it's deeply moving because many of the children don't have a single pair of shoes that fits them. So we have seen many children whose shoes are so tight their toes are curled up.
Oof.
And, or they're wearing like their parents' shoes. So they're so big they're tripping on them. We've seen many examples of kids with their shoes duct taped together to keep the sole on. And the impact on the children, first of all, on their bodies, obviously, but also socially, it's really hard for them. And we were able to start this program probably about 6 years ago now. And we're delivering about 400 pairs of shoes to children in the fall and the spring. We want them to start the school year with brand new shoes. And we've made these neat foot measures so that the teachers can measure their feet, because the fit is a major problem. So we measure the kids' feet. There are liaisons at the schools who pick out the kids who are in the highest need. And I started the Walk in Beauty program with my mom a number of years ago. She helped me, yeah. And but with incredible support from Adopt a Native Elder and a large community of volunteers. And when you go and you actually put the shoes on the children, it's very profound. So just a couple examples that come to mind. First of all, once we were delivering them to kindergartners and one of the little girls couldn't tie her own shoes, so we looked over and there was a child tying each of her shoes for her other kindergartners.
So sweet.
Because they're excited for each other that you got these new shoes. And we've seen as the kids leave, you know, they'll say thank you, and then you see them, they're skipping. Oh my gosh, I can jump so much higher. I can run so much faster.
That is so adorable.
And I joined our coordinators this fall, and one of the kids said, "Damn, these are cool." And we started giggling. We couldn't help it. And then we looked at his shoes, and he was wearing house slippers to school. And so he got these amazing big black skate shoes instead of house slippers, because that's all he had. And so from, you know, moving, you moved from kind of giggling about it to understanding the serious impact also of the shoes.
Absolutely.
And we have gotten reports that it helps them in school too, because they're more willing to go to school.
Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Because they're not feeling stigmatized.
For more info on the program, visit them online at anelder.org. Thanks for listening to Soundwaves from the Underground. For all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. Jimmy Martin will be back in the studio in a couple of weeks to talk about winter films and possible Oscar bait coming out. We want to know more about what you're looking forward to this season. It's time to snuggle up and watch some new releases and movies. We want to hear about it. So you can either send an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we may just play you on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine, produced by Gavin Sheehan. Associate producers include Esther Moronio, Alexander Ortega, and Dan Nalen. Executive producer is Angela H. Brown. The theme was performed by Lindsay Heath and recorded by Mike Sasich. The main logo and art design are by T. Dong, and the technical design is by Kate Colgan. Next week, we've got the new U of U design course. We're going to chat about SLC Punk 2, and we're going to learn about Voodoo Productions.